So anyway, let me keep going here. Thanks so much for coming to our session. I really see this as an opportunity to talk about how we can leverage the tools that we have to get our stories out into the world and to get people to share them, to draw people to the work that we do. It's not going to be strictly Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, but we have two panelists who have some really important expertise that they're going to share, but I really want this to be interactive. So I want you guys to bring your best ideas, your best practices, and let's make this a really interactive session so that we can all come away with something we can take home and leverage. I'm going to keep introducing. On my far right is Mark Trahant. He is the current editor of Indian Country Today, and I don't know how many of you were here last year, but right before the conference last year, Indian Country Today kind of folded. It's a longtime newspaper. Mark can give you a little background on it. But Mark was hired in the spring to give it a new life, and he has really transformed it. And then Mark has also been a professor. I don't know if you still are a professor in North Dakota and in Alaska. He was my editor years and years ago. Continues to be one of my favorite ever editors from the Salt Lake Tribune. And he's a little embarrassed. And then we have next to me Michelle Bloom, who's a fellow at the University of Michigan right now, a Knight Fellow. And she's going to talk about Instagram and Instagram stories. So do either of you want to begin?
I'm going to do some history, so perhaps.
Go ahead and pull the microphone closer to you, Mark.
Okay. Good morning. So the title of this for me is perfect because I was a viral video, and I was a viral video involving the President of the United States. And it was actually before YouTube in 2004. And if you want to look it up, just Google my name and George Bush. And it was number 3 at one point on YouTube. It was on Funny or Die several times, The Daily Show several times. It became one of those viral hits that pops up every once in a while and resurfaces. That experience is funny because I basically asked him a question and it went viral. And you could tell the audience was laughing at the president when he was answering. And so you knew kind of that it was going to go. But it was before YouTube, so you really had no idea how it would get. But people had to actually record it and put it on an email and send it around. And I remember going back to my hotel in Washington, and when I went down to the front desk, my light was blinking, and I picked it up, and they said, "You got to come down here." And so I went down there, and they handed me this stack of messages, and the clerk said, "Who are you?" It had like 35 messages. People would send it back to me, and I'd read it, and they'd say, "Have you seen this?" And say, "Yeah, I was there." So it was... Being a print guy, it really made me think, I need to understand social media, and I need to see how it's changing the world. And for me, the lesson almost immediately was that social media is really the natural form of storytelling. We are going back to the norm, not the exception. The exception is the news that's been told since about 1920, where it's been decided by editors and focused and then vetted. The first newspaper was Acta Dernia in Rome. It had a circulation of 1. It would be posted first originally in stone about 200 or 300 years before the Common Era. And when the Roman Republic was in existence, they would put the stone tablets out front. People would come and make copies of them and basically post them on their Facebook wall. And people would share the story. The very wealthy people would have scribes go and tell their version of the same story. And so already it would get twisted. Second major social media explosion was Martin Luther. And the genius of Martin Luther was that he did it in German. Had he done the same thing in Latin, it would have not got the same attention. But he did it in the people's language, and that changed the story forever. And then my favorite version of history and social media and how we're going back to the norm happened in the Americas in 1680, and that was the Pueblo Revolt. And the Pueblo Revolt was really the first American Revolution. It's where the Pueblos forced the Spanish to leave the Southwest. And what's interesting is they did it with a medium of rope. And the rope were tied into knots, and each village was given a knot. And they had a story associated with each of the knots as they'd untie it. And when the entire sequence of knots was untied, that was the day of the revolution, and they were to then rise up against the Spanish. And being a social media story, this was sent out to some 30 villages in precise fashion by runners. And being social media, one village got it wrong. And they untied the first knot before they were supposed to, and so they were off by one day. And that village actually rose up a day early, almost putting the whole revolution at risk because it took away the element of surprise. What's interesting about that revolution is when the Spanish came back 12 years later, they came back on Pueblo terms, and it was a very different arrangement than that first encounter. Shows how stories like this have connections to today. Just this year, there's been a ceremony in Santa Fe on the Reconquest, and that ceremony was basically put on the shelf saying we can't keep doing this, that this is dividing these two communities, and they're refashioning it. So it shows how this long arc of history continues to be a part of our story. I'll talk just briefly about some things. So when this thing happened with George Bush and I realized the power of social media, I was then the editor of the editorial page at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and decided that we should be rethinking everything we do and started pursuing a lot of difference. One of the first was, so you think about what's new in the history of the world, one thing that came out of social media that absolutely is new is that a young person today, if they go to a conference like this, is going to meet somebody and be friends with them for the rest of their lives. That's absolutely new. In my generation, if you met someone at a conference, you might see them a generation, 10 years later. You might call them on the phone once in a while. You promise to keep in touch. But now, people will connect in a way that they'll know what's going on in their lives virtually real time forever. And that's pretty extraordinary. So this connection is one of the things different. So we tried to figure out how to use that in a news context, and one of the ways we tried was a thing we called the virtual editorial board, where we started publishing early in the morning, after our morning meeting, what ideas we were working on, what angle of our editorial was going to be, who was writing the editorial, how to get in touch with them, and we would allow the editorial to get shaped by readers as we were writing it in real time and have that feedback. And a couple of times it actually was really important because someone would call in and say, look, I'm an expert on this topic and you're getting it wrong because of X, Y, and Z, and we would follow up on that. So that interactivity, I think, was really successful. The other thing we learned is that you have to be able to use repetition, that life on the web is really short, and unless you have a big following like the President of the United States, it's going to be out there, and then it's going to be gone. And so there's nothing wrong with going back to it. And where this lesson really hit is we had a measure in Washington State to repeal the gas tax. And the Seattle PI, for those that may know the newspaper, was kind of the classic tax and spend liberal newspaper. We didn't like any tax. We loved every tax. And so we decided to write an editorial on the same subject every single day until Election Day. And when the numbers first came up, it was way down in the polls. It looked like there was no chance that the repeal was going to happen, that voters wanted to save the $20 or whatever from the gas tax. And we were just adamant that this should not happen. And every day, we called it the Daily No. And we ran it for 37 straight days. And at the end, the gas tax was not repealed. Voters listened. Of course, Seattle being Seattle, then you can't always. Part of it is the unique readers we had. The other thing that when the PI died, I decided to kind of launch into this as a career. And I was very fortunate when the paper died. I started writing different foundations. And healthcare reform was coming. And I made a pitch to Kaiser Family Foundation to write about healthcare reform. And I decided to do it entirely through social media. And a couple things came up almost immediately. One was free is a really powerful force in this new medium. The idea of a traditional freelancer making sure they get paid for everything is a contrary notion to the way things are running today. And I know that's hard for a lot of people in the freelance business because you always want to think about scarcity and getting paid for it. But there are other ways to get paid for it. And so I started right off with free and would send it out via social media, and all media could use my stuff for free. And almost immediately, I had 400,000 or 500,000 readers. And it's been such a powerful lesson that even today, when I took over Indian Country Today, I made it so none of our stuff is copyrighted. Everything can be used by any medium for any reason. If they give us credit, great. If they don't, we're not going to squawk. It really is, I think, an important force in this. The other thing we learned is the power of riding waves. When there's a big story that people are talking about, if you figure out how to get into that, your audience is going to go up significantly. And you can certainly see that right now with the Kavanaugh hearings and the whole discussion about Me Too. Both of those have ways to tap audiences that you didn't know you had. And the third thing that I think is critical for me is that the power of the network is more important than hierarchy. That looking at the world flat and how different organizations tap into. One of my favorite tweets came from Mark Cuban, who tweeted one day, you know what's cooler than 1 million followers? 100 of the right ones. And in this network-based system of information, that is really true. That if you can find 100 people who are clued in to thousands of networks, they are far more powerful than 1 million people. And that is part of the trick, is getting in your mind at least a map of where people are and how they might help carry your content. And then the final thing I'll pass on is one of the things I really like about this social media age is measuring everything. You know where your readers are. You know what they're looking at in real time. And I don't think you should ever shape a message to that, but you can certainly help understand why something carries one day that it doesn't the next, and start to think through what that means as a content producer, as a writer.
So, Mark, can you just talk really briefly about the platform and how you've focused Indian Country Today and,
sure.
and delivery, just briefly?
Sure. Well, when I was hired, I thought that because the paper had gone dark, this was an amazing opportunity because we didn't have to do things the way they'd been done before. And so I went in with the first set of rules that we should design everything for the cell phone. Any other medium is irrelevant. How it looks on the web, I don't care. I really wanted it entirely based on the cell phone. When you think about it, the cell phone is the most powerful medium ever invented. It's virtually ubiquitous. People carry it with them everywhere. A millennial looks at their cell phone 150 times a day. If you can't make a business out of that, you're crazy. You should be doing something else. That is an extraordinary opportunity. And so we designed it completely for the cell phone. And our first quarter just finished, and we're ahead of everything, which is great on both advertising and readership. But my favorite number in our mix is our number one demographic is 25 to 34. And nobody in the media can say that. So I'm hoping that holds. But that's, I think, because of our relentless focus on the cell phone, that it is the medium of the future. One of the challenges, I think, for us that fits into this panel is we need to get people off of social media. We need to think of social media as a reference point, but we need them on our platform. Facebook does nothing for us. It doesn't give us good numbers. It doesn't give us advertising. It doesn't give us time on screen. We really need to figure out a way that we can use that as a reference point, but get them to our site as quickly as possible. And so we've been trying a couple strategies to do that. Not all successful. One of the things that's true with a lot of startup publications is a high bounce rate. and we have a very high bounce rate, and we're trying to work on that now. I think the other thing with social media is the opportunity to help have people see you as a different kind of publication and help carry that message forward. And we see that every day with the types of stories we produce. And there's actually a tension because one of my associate editors is a lot more open to stories that I would say are less policy. And I'm a policy person, and some of the stories he likes will go viral, and they'd make me cringe. So the challenge is to get that balance between the two and figure out story. I have on our board, I always put up a weekly slogan for the week, and one of them is, let's make our readers smarter.
Thank you, Mark. Go ahead, Michelle.
All right, so I figured I'd start by telling you a little bit about me. Like Judy said, I'm a Knight Wallace Fellow at the University of Michigan right now, and what I'm studying is visual storytelling, specifically on social media. I figured I'd tell you where I kind of got my start. I've kind of always been a visual designer. I started out as a newspaper designer. I always joke that it's been my job to make the news look pretty. And about 10 years ago, I moved to DC. And many people don't know that Politico actually has a newspaper. I've been working on designing that for the last 5 years. And slowly through the process of designing Politico's newspaper, I've kind of expanded my designs into more like digital illustrations, things like that. And within the last year, really pushed myself to start designing more for social media. So looking for different ways to tell our stories, reach out to our audiences. We're one of those publications that, you know, started in 2007 as a website and like went out there, really went on TV, radio, started talking about the presidential election, selling our journalism, and found ourselves falling behind in the age of social media, which is really interesting if you think about it. So a lot of our strategy around social media has been just sharing links, going on Twitter, having our reporters share our stories. And while that tends to drive some traffic, you're not really telling your stories to your audience. And like you were saying, most people are looking at the news on their phone, right? Like you're scrolling through Twitter, you're on Facebook, you're on Instagram. These are the places where they're getting their news. They're not necessarily coming to your website anymore. Not very often is somebody going to go type in newyorktimes.com, go to the New York Times website, especially now that there's no bylines on there. And so really what we're trying to do now is use these platforms that are available to us to kind of draw our readers in. So I thought that maybe I'd share with you guys some examples of things that have worked for us and that I see that work for other people. I think practical uses for journalists is probably the most useful thing for most people. So I always say it's always the best thing is about writing a great share line. So what does that mean? That's how you're putting yourself, presenting yourself out there to the people that you're trying to attract. So my first tip is always try to be accessible. Your tweet, your Facebook post, your Instagram post needs to be able to stand alone. You can't just tweet the headline and expect that people are going to know what you're talking about, especially when you start getting into gritty topics. And you have to assume that the reader doesn't necessarily know as much as you do. So make sure you give it context and make sure that it can stand alone. So here's an example of something that doesn't work. What is the most powerful code-breaking tool? And what, I mean, you're not giving anybody any context here. We've got the headline down below in this Facebook post. I guess it's a Twitter post. But people don't start at the bottom when they're reading, right? And so you have to give it context. My second tip is to make sure that you're accessible. So without the same tip, right? So this is a better New York Times one. For months, the mobster has been pursued by someone who wanted him dead. On Thursday at a McDonald's in the Bronx, it appears that someone caught up with him. It kind of brings the reader in. It's more of a story. What happened? I want to know more. So you're probably more likely to click on this link and read the story. My second tip is don't bury the lead. Especially with a breaking news story, people need to know what's going on. So make sure that you tell them, breaking news, this is what's happening. And then try to give a little bit of context. Keep it clear, keep it concise. But, you know, make sure that you tell them what's happening. Here's another example. This is a Facebook post. Exactly. The news here is that he's going to be sentenced, right? Nowhere in that post does it say that. The news in this story, this was a breaking news story, that Flynn was going to be sentenced on December 18th. Nowhere in the post does it actually say that news.
And it seems like the fear is whoever wrote the top part wanted to make sure not to repeat the headline. But maybe the headline should have been the top.
Exactly. When you're posting these things on Facebook, on Twitter, the link's down below. People aren't necessarily reading that tiny type down at the bottom. They're using it to click on the link. Don't be afraid to give them the same information. Maybe word it differently, but make sure that you're giving them the information, because that's the part that they're reading. My third tip is to always keep it conversational. Ask yourself, would I say this out loud? Is this how I would talk to my friends? Is this how I would explain it? I always say, is this how I would explain it to my grandmother? You don't know who the other person is that's reading it, and you want to make sure that it's keeping it accessible. So I'll let you guys read it for a second. Here's another one. Again, Politico, there's a lot of Trump talk here, right? Always tell us why it's important. Don't be afraid to tell your readers why they should care about it. So don't just give them the news. Tell them, hey, this is why it's important. So here, you know, okay, he was a special guest at a fundraiser. Who cares? Well, hey, these are the people hosting it. Like, it can be a big deal. So, in this one, you know, who cares that the Facebook's vice president for global public policy was sitting behind Kavanaugh? Well, Facebook employees care. Keep it concise. Don't make it too long. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's open for interpretation, right?
Because the issue here is man who is corporate officer at a social platform that reaches millions of people was at this highly charged size.
Exactly. Yeah. But he's also standing for all these employees that he represents, right?
Yeah.
So. And do we care? I guess, does the public care that, you know, this person that is in charge of Facebook, which we all use, was sitting right there behind him? So keep it concise. Break up your sentences. This is not long-form journalism in any way. So I find a lot of people, Twitter with the 140 characters originally kind of forced you to be a little bit concise, but 140 characters can still be a lot. But I find people will copy and paste entire paragraphs from their story in their posts, things like this. Sum it up, give us the nut graph, tell us what we need to know. So this particular post, I figured I'd give you an example of what it said before and how we modified it. So originally it said, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell expects the jury committee to give Christine Blasey Ford, the California professor accusing Brett Kavanaugh of sexually assaulting her decades ago, a fair hearing next week. Again, you would never say that out loud. So we changed it to, Republicans say Christine Blasey Ford will get a fair hearing next week to talk about her sexual assault allegations against Kavanaugh, but Dems are already crying foul. So again, breaking up those sentences and finding another way to tell it. So like the original share line on this story was not doing well at all, from what I've been told. It also was copied and pasted directly from the story. By breaking it up, the engagement on it actually doubled. So,
can I just pipe in here? I think one of the things that you're showing in the examples there is how important the writing is. I mean, it's just, it's so muscular and it's so bright and energetic. I think that's hard for a lot of us writers.
But I find that the journalists in the newsroom are actually the ones that are the best at it because they know the stories the best, right? So I find a lot of times that the people who are posting things on our social media that work in, you know, our web producers and the people that are posting for us don't know the stories. Like, we read them, we scan them, we're trying to figure out what's going on in them. But a lot of times what we end up doing is going back to the writer and being like, hey, explain this story to me. Quickly, tell me what this story is about. And by having that conversation, we're able to find where the share lines are. So one thing that I would suggest for reporters is, especially if you work in a newsroom that is sharing these things on social media, come up with ideas for share lines. Your social media team will be super excited that you're coming up with ideas. And it helps them understand what you're talking about, especially when you're talking about complex subjects. Another thing that I didn't really put in there is that lists do really well. So when I said breaking up your information into sentences, whatever, I know a lot of journalists hate listicles. But, you know, finding those bullet points, especially if it's something that's this, you know, a list of things that, you know, led up to something, it's a really good way of breaking down the information in a way that the reader understands. So that's the share lines. The words are important. I don't want to understress that in any way. But because social media is such a visual place, I like to focus on the visuals too. And that's, you know, like I said, where my background is. So I wanted to give you some examples. And it's not always pictures. It's not always videos. It can be lots of different things. So I figured I'd give you a couple examples of this, different ways that you can use visuals effectively. So this is something fairly recent. It's from August. And it was the Ohio house race. This is a good share line. Just look how close this race is. And B, it very simple graphic that was actually just, you know, one of our breakdowns that was on our website that we screenshotted. But it gives you very clearly where the breakdown is. So you don't have to do a ton of reading to get to it. Again, there's a link so that way you can get back to the story. But it's a very simple visual that works well. This one's from the other day. The Washington Post posted it. This is where the column should be. It's an example of where there's no visual, but that is the visual. It's really powerful. And then I figured I'd tell you a little bit about alternative storytelling. So I've kind of focused on Instagram posts, well, not so much Instagram posts, Twitter posts, Facebook posts, but how do you use a Twitter thread? So this is something that a lot of people are using more of. I think it's a really great way to tell a narrative, so I figured I'd give you a couple examples of that. I think that it's important to include images when you can in a Twitter thread. This is a really great one. This is a Bloomberg opinion thread that I found the other day. It starts out, a European invasion is sweeping America, roundabouts. So we've got a picture of the roundabout, right? And then we kind of get into some graphics. A staple in the UK since the 1960s, roundabouts have only recently started appearing in the US. American drivers still use the roundabouts less efficiently than their European counterparts. Then again, we get this really cool picture of roundabouts with more information. Roundabouts work in a simple principle.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's not helpful.
The thread is unfurling.
There you go. Okay, so here we go. European invasion is sweeping America, roundabouts. Graphic. I think this picture is pretty powerful. Photo of a roundabout that they've found. Again, another graphic where you're most likely to drive in circles. And then it's an opinion piece, why should we care about roundabouts? Again, a breakdown, there's a little bit of a list here. Traffic flows more smoothly, accidents are rarer, head-on collisions are unlikely. A little context, before 2000 there were only a few dozen roundabouts in the US, now there are more than 4,000. Here's a different kind of photo for you. It's not just another circle, roundabout. Again, another breakdown. They're not for everyone, but we've got a list. Yeah, and actually what I'll do is I'll share like these links that I'm sharing. We'll make sure that they're posted so you guys can get them. And I'll tweet it too. this is the last one. America's in the midst of a major shift. And it's, you know, like I said, this is an opinion piece talking about roundabouts, but it gives you a really interesting narrative to drive you into it and explain to you, like, what is a roundabout and why do we care?
It's funny, they're putting in a roundabout in front of my office as we speak.
They're everywhere, are they not?
Are people getting ready with some questions?
I've got a couple more I was going to show you. I'll probably skip this one for now, but you should all check it out. It's from BBC Africa. It's kind of intense, so I'll warn you about that, which is why I'm not going to share it right now. But I'll make sure that you guys all can find the link to it. And then something that has worked really well for us in the newsroom that I wanted to share with you is kind of a reporter's viewpoint. So things that work really well, especially we're talking in the age of Trump, right? So we've got this whole fake news narrative, and we've got this whole, like, journalists all lie and all this kind of crap that people are talking about. How do you combat that? You explain how you reported the story. So we've really been focusing on the human aspect of our stories. And so this was a huge investigation. It was actually a follow-up. And Josh explains here in his Twitter thread, sometimes one interesting story leads to another. He wrote this really great story, and then he got a tip from a reader, which led to another really long investigation that he worked on. So we've got the link to the story here, kind of a cool picture. He says, after we published that story, a message popped up in his encrypted email inbox. This one involved a standing long-round DEA investigation in Afghanistan. Oh, you're not seeing it at all. Jeez.
So as you're getting that, pulling that up, one of the things that I think is really interesting, the two words that keep coming up is, well, or the one concept that seems to keep coming up is, storytelling is what brings the relationship with our readers, our listeners, the people who we're communicating with, and that it's a dynamic. It's not just a one-way street. I just think that's really fascinating. We're having a relationship here, which is very uncomfortable for someone like me.
Okay, so here you go. Sometimes one interesting story leads to another. Email popped up in his encrypted mailbox. We've got the map here that showed all of the drug narcotic trade that we produced for this story. Here he uses a visual that's actually just a screenshot from the story. More info about the tipster and what the tipster told him, which led him to investigate more. Hey, I spent weeks reporting it out and found out that the story was even bigger than what I was told and way more complicated. These are actual photos that he kind of had taken while he was out. Again, another graphic from the story that he was able to tweet out. So it's kind of a really long, it goes kind of into depth about how he reported the story. So it's something you should check out. We have people in the office that definitely will help coach reporters, especially on big stuff like this. This particular Twitter thread also appeared as a sidebar in the story. Because we thought that how I reported it was such a great thing. But it started out as a purely social media thing that we did. We also then turned it into a Facebook Live where he explained it to people. And we did some Instagram stories. So that was the other thing I'm going to touch on very briefly. It's sort of what I've been focusing on a lot in my studies this year. And it's finding effective visual ways to tell stories on Instagram. I don't know how many of you have ever used Instagram stories. Probably very few. I find that most people that are using Instagram stories, they're doing it on their personal accounts. It's a lot of people sharing where they are, what they're doing during the course of their day. It's an interesting platform for news developers to get into because Instagram stories, especially on a business account, provide a way to link to your story, which is super important, which Instagram posts do not. And B, it's a way to visually tell your story. So again, it's all about the storytelling here. So I actually want to show you this one, if I can get it to come up. It's not even ours. But it's good.
How about if we go ahead and start taking some questions? Are you, while you're getting that, and then we can break? Does that sound good?
Yep.
Okay, does anyone have a question? Remember, the rules are come on up, use the microphone, say who you are, where you're from, and your question. And I would suggest that everyone, when they come up with a question, also come up with an observation, a tip, their own experience. So come on up, Julie.
I don't know if that microphone works anymore. It's not
sound. Okay.
Okay. So my name is Julie Halpert. I'm a freelance journalist. I have a couple questions. The first one is, first of all, I'm not on Instagram. My young adults are on it, and they, I think, are really not interested in having me get on there. But I want to hear about this, of course, because I never really envisioned that something that journalists use a lot. And my second question is about Twitter. Is it considered like a faux pas to post your own story? So the quandary I'm in is a lot of my editors will say, please share your stories, but I find when I share my own stories that people don't respond, and it almost seems like self-promotional. So I'm just wondering if you have any tips. That's been my experience, that maybe I'm not doing it the right way, or I don't have a catchy title or something, but it always seems like I'm sort of under pressure from my editors to really promote them out, and yet people don't really... I don't know. When I look at other people's Twitter feeds, they're not promoting their own stories as much. So, sorry, two totally different questions, but I'd be curious what you have to say.
I do think it's important to promote your own stories. I think it's also important for your publications to be retweeting you when you promote your own stories. I think it's a good way for you to build your own audience and for them to then share organically your story. But again, it's all about your share lines, right? So some ways that you can do it personally so that way it doesn't seem too self-promotion. It's don't tweet, hey, check out this story I wrote necessarily, but give us something interesting from within the story. Or you could say, I talked to this person and, you know, give us some context is a really good way to do it. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I'd add to that. And this is actually a discussion in our newsroom because I have a really strong modesty gene, and I hate to put stuff out like that. One of the ways I do it is my take on and try to make it so that it's very clear that this is an idea that I'm throwing out there. My colleagues would love to things like the most popular, and I just, anytime we say it's the most popular, I cringe, but it actually works.
Yeah, so I think it's sort of up here. There's no audio with this one.
So can you read it from
Yeah, so as night falls, motels and RV parks, let's go back. Motels and RV parks across the U.S. fill with travelers. But many motorists choose another place to sleep, Walmart. The retail giant lets people camp in many of its parking lots. That has made it a reliable destination. Some of the travelers have a sense of adventure, wheelies. Others are looking to save a buck. And still more have nowhere else to go. Mike and George spent several nights in Walmart parking lots. They slept in the back of this cargo van. Here are some of the people they met along the way. Peter Waracasa, Pooler, Georgia, heading home to Florida from Maine. Pat and Ed Balkin, Waterboro, South Carolina, driving to New England from Florida. We've been parking in Walmart since about 2002, Ed said. Frankie Davis stayed at Walmart for the first time in August. That was after his home in Brooklet, Georgia was broken into. Sonny travels the U.S. and spends the rest of his time in Asheville, North Carolina. Oh. You're going to see a lot of folks out here running from something. The Walmart in Savannah, Georgia doesn't let drivers spend the night. Thomas Vashi's job, telling them they have to sleep elsewhere. And then here's your call to action, swipe up to see more. And then the New York Times does this thing where they tell you who took the photos, who did the editing, and who did the Instagram story. So it's kind of an interesting example of, again, the storytelling process there. And there are a bunch of ways to do it. One thing that I think may have worked better there, I think the photos are really effective, but one thing I think may have worked better is maybe to have people saying those quotes, you know, capturing that video. So that's one thing I would have done differently in it, but there you go. It's a prime example. And I'll share a bunch of other examples that you guys can look at. It's a really interesting medium, and it's something that I feel like most people should investigate.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Yep.
Come on up, Dan. Give us a tip or give us an observation.
Okay, I'm Dan Fagan, New York University, and I'm a writer too. I'll begin with my observation, and that is I'm an inappropriate tweeter. I would like to fix that. Yeah, I'm too opinionated, and I use it as an outlet for my angst. So, yeah, I have a few questions. One is just a very specific one about Twitter. Forgive me, I was a little late if either of these have been answered. Sorry. Am I better off, are we better off, when we're reacting to another tweet or another story, to just join the comment string, or are we better off comment tweeting on top of Twitter? And is there clear data on that? And my second question is, you know, you mentioned Insta, and I'm sure perhaps Facebook came up before I walked in. a lot of journalists I know, Facebook seems to have sort of, especially after their algorithm changed, Facebook seems to have evolved into sort of more of a personal zone for friends. Twitter is more sort of pushing your work out, especially to other journalists, but also to the broader world to some extent for people who have a lot of followers. And Insta seems to be more obviously visual and therefore sort of very kind of light, lifestyle-y, kind of quirky stuff like the one that you just showed with the Walmart Parkers. Are those stereotypes more or less accurate, or are we all making a mistake by doing that? So those are my two questions.
Thank you. Go for it.
I know you said that you guys don't get a lot of traffic from Facebook.
Well,
that,
we do get a lot of traffic.
Oh, you do get a lot of traffic
from
Facebook?
We're trying to get away from it.
Okay. So that's our number one driver, actually, I think is actually, yeah. The key is understanding the algorithm a little bit and knowing that you can't keep posting the same links over and over again. So if we want to share a story multiple times, we know, okay, you can do a photo post, you can do a video post, and you can do a link post and share the story in different ways. What was I going to say? I don't think that Instagram is... Instagram started out being very lifestyle-y and very... very lighthearted. I think that it's changing. And I'm sort of trying to lead that push a little bit with journalists to understand how Instagram can be useful, especially considering how many people spend time on Instagram these days, scrolling through the photos. And I found that our readers really engage with our Instagram posts and our Instagram stories. So, yeah. And as far as Twitter and only sharing with other journalists, and
what's the best way to react?
I don't know that there necessarily is a best way. Have you found something that works best as far as like responding to a thread or?
I think partly it depends where you are in the wave. If you're at the beginning of the wave, jump into it. If it's later in the wave, you want to avoid it because you're not going to get read. So it's gauging kind of how much, if there are 3,000 comments, it's just not going to get the same truck as your 10 or 15.
Are we better off commenting on creating our own comments?
If at that point, yeah. You want to try to start a new one.
If you have something to add to the conversation, for sure, yeah.
One thing that I'm hearing, too, you guys can weigh in on this, is that Instagram and Instagram stories in particular are sort of like the next wave. It's the sort of front edge of the discussion of social media.
Yeah, I mean, I found a lot of news platforms. I know that the New York Times and the Washington Post both have large Snapchat teams. But I find Instagram stories to be way more engaging. So, and the one thing that I'll point out with Instagram stories, some news sources will really produce stories, take them outside of Instagram to produce them. I find the ones that are more native to Instagram, so like even that New York Times one that I showed, it was actually all produced inside Instagram using Instagram's fonts. It keeps it way more accessible to the normal Instagram user. So if they're clicking through the stories in their feed and they see stuff from their friends and then all of a sudden they see this news thing, they're more likely to stay with it if it looks native to the platform than if it looks like a more well-produced thing that you've done outside.
If I may jump in just really fast, I am by no means a professional or a journalist, but I am a student.
Come on in and use the microphone, please. Thanks, just grab one.
I'm Cassie, and I'm a student from Mizzou, University of Missouri. And as I said earlier, I'm by no means a professional or a panelist, but I think when it comes to social media, I know millennials are annoying or sometimes we're just in your face, but we know how to use the social media. We use it constantly. That's how we gather our news. So I think that a big tip for journalists is to go to the audience and ask us what we'd like to see. And that would end up helping journalists too with sharing the story.
Yeah, most interestingly, I find the millennials in the newsroom are the ones least willing to use it in the news source, which has been super interesting in the things I've been doing.
Cheryl,
hi,
comment?
I'm Cheryl Hogue. I'm with Chemical and Engineering News in Washington, D.C. And, Mark, I just wanted to make a comment that we designed for mobile first as well, too. I want to ask you, what do you do with sidebars, or do you just not use them? And I wanted to ask Michelle about illustrating. I write about toxic chemicals, you know, and things like scientific integrity that are really hard to illustrate. And I don't know, I mean, the roundabout series that you gave me really excited me, and I thought I'd love to do that because I could break things up into little bits, but I really don't know how to illustrate.
Sidebars are an issue, and we pretty much don't do them. Our sidebars are an issue, and we pretty much stopped doing them. We'll break it into a separate story. But one thing Michelle said that I think is really important is there's nothing wrong on social media with repackaging a story. And once you run it, doesn't mean that's the end of it. We measure every Saturday, we post the top 10 stories of the week, which instantly became number 6 in our top 10 stories of the week. But one of the things in that is how popular archive stories are. 3 out of the 10 every week. In fact, we had to break it into a separate category just for archive stories because they were always showing up in our top 10. So that's where sidebars can fit in, is come back with a second version of it, a third version of it, a fourth version of it.
Also look at your sidebar and see if there's a different platform that it makes more sense. So a lot of times what most people would consider a sidebar is what I'll break out into an Instagram story. It's kind of a side way to get people into the story. It could be a Twitter thread that gives you other information. But those are the elements in your story that actually would be more digestible for social in a lot of times. And as far as images for, you know, certain things, I know it can be really difficult, especially if you don't have access to a lot of different things. One way to look at it is there a good graphic that I can do that would kind of break things down? Yeah, I mean, I know some of these topics are really hard, so.
Great, thank you. Your name?
Great. Erica Geis, and I'm an independent journalist. And one of my fellow freelancers, her tag says CEO and janitor. And, you know, as an independent journalist, you have to do it all. And it's really hard to find time for, you know, following up for payment, let alone doing extra stuff. And, you know, I mean, I always post my stories on Twitter and Facebook. And earlier this year, I got an opportunity to go to Iraq, and I really pushed myself to share photos on Instagram, and because I wanted to show another side of Iraq that's not war and strife. And so my tip, I guess, was maybe obvious, but you know, I was using hashtags like everyday Iraq, everyday Kurdistan, everyday Middle East, and I actually have gotten a lot of new followers from the Middle East. I don't know what they're saying in comments to my stories, but it's been an interesting experiment. And I mean, a lot of the visuals were really great, so that made it, you know, one of the most popular things that I've done on social media. But my question is, if you're a freelancer and you're trying to do it all yourself, I mean, I don't even add my news stories to my website. I haven't done that in like a year and a half, you know? So what should I prioritize? What are the most important things to do to get to drive traffic to my stories?
I think that we live in a day and age where your social media accounts are your personal website. So I wouldn't worry so much about not updating your clips on your website. one thing that I was going to bring up, because you were talking about, you know, posting photos on Instagram. A, yes, hashtags are the number one way to gain new followers on Instagram, but make sure that you're using them thoughtfully. A lot of times I'll spend some time researching a hashtag, see what kinds of things people are posting under that hashtag, because it may not be what you think it is. Don't be afraid to collect photos and videos as you're out reporting. You don't need to post them right away. You can wait until your story comes and repackage it and find other ways to use it.
I have a fun little hashtag story. So one of the things I do, and we mentioned data a couple of times, I have built a database of all the Native Americans running for office in the country. And it's pretty comprehensive. And one of the things I started to do,
is Breakout Women Running, and I wanted to look at a hashtag to do that. And so I started using the hashtag SheRepresents, and a designer in Los Angeles, Bethany Yellowtail, liked it so much that she started producing shirts with She Represents on it and all the names of all the folks from my database on the back of the shirt. So it's really hard to understate the power of hashtags, especially on Instagram, but Twitter too.
The one thing that I'll tell you, if you're tweeting out your stories thoughtfully, that's something that will get you more attention. I know that there is an editor in our office who will, before they interview anybody, will look at their Instagram and their Twitter and like, what are you tweeting? How are you presenting yourself? That is your brand. So I think that that is something that you really need to pay attention to.
Metrics person and Twitter person, where do we find the best hashtags? I've actually researched some of mine before and found that, oh, I should use this instead of this. I'm going to get a lot more impressions. So do you have any tricks and tips on that area?
I don't really have a bunch of tips. I know that there's some like websites and stuff out there that'll like give you suggestions. I don't find them to be super helpful. A lot of this kind of happens organically. Seeing what other people are using on our stories is interesting too, in a way that I kind of figure that out.
Yeah, I would make sure to take a look at what's trending and why those hashtags are trending. And not just do it nationally, but break it down in different regions, because sometimes it's very different.
And you could do that with Google Trends, right?
Yeah.
That's one. Does everyone know that in Google, in your Google browser, there's a way to look at trends that are happening? And so even just choosing words, I mean, even something as simple as climate change versus global warming, you can see which one is getting more impressions.
Or the important people in your story or things like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Come on up.
Hi, I'm Emily Gertz. I publish a newsletter called Deregulation Nation, and it's very much in terms of being a news product about just about what Mark was talking about, which is I'm seeking to amplify reporting that folks here are already doing, although I'm probably going to expand into some original reporting as well. And I'm looking, I'm publishing it in a way that it's very readable on cell phone, smartphones, because that is already the device by which the majority of people are getting news, and that is only predicted to go up in the next few decades, that's how they put it in the marketing research. Who knows what devices will be here before that happens? But it's only going up, and use of laptops is only going down, and tablets is pretty static. So I wanted to second that when you're thinking about how you're publishing your work, if you're self-publishing or recontextualizing something you've done for another editor, that doing it in a way that will be easily accessible on mobile phone is super, super important. And I'd also, I have cards, if anyone would like to start letting me know when they have a story coming out that I could consider for inclusion, I'd be very happy to do that. I did want to ask, and also there are some tools such as CrowdTangle, which are a little complicated to get off the ground with, but can help you figure out how your tweets and other people's or social media and other people's social media are performing in terms of getting spread across networks. I would say one caution, which is Facebook now owns CrowdTangle, and Facebook also owns Instagram. And Facebook will basically be counting on Instagram to save its butt as usage of its platform decreases in coming years. So if that's an issue for you, just be aware of it. So now that I've pontificated, I did want to ask Mark, like, what do you see coming in terms of like news products that get the reporting out to news consumers, for lack of a better term?
I don't know. One thing, I used to work for Hearst Corporation, and we used to have retreats where we talked about the future. And the creepiest one was a guy talking about the role of implants and how quickly that could take off.
And most of the technology is built around people who are blind and being able to see again through implants. But they, once they started talking about that, they said, well, of course we could put the internet in that. And you think about always being connected and being able to see that. I mean, it's both creepy and exciting.
Are you folks, as you're revamping Indian Country media, are you looking into any kind of a virtual reality or news 360 type applications?
Well, we do play with 360, but the big one we're doing is actually old media. We're basically on election night creating a network for one night, and we're going to do a 5-hour coast-to-coast broadcast working with a traditional television station, so we're kind of going backwards in that sense. But, I mean, it ties in because of social media and because of our platform. We think we'll double our regular audience in one night. So it all connects.
Okay, so like chasing the new is not necessarily going to be the best strategy.
I don't think you should ever chase the news. I think you should chase the story.
Okay.
Thanks, Ann. Come on up.
Hi, my name is Louise Leaf. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I'm the founder of the Science and Media Project. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about some of the other platforms. This is coming off Mark's comment that it's getting the right audience. So you've talked a lot about Instagram and Twitter. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about LinkedIn and Reddit, which have very interesting audiences, how you might use those platforms to really target, you know, the audience that might be most useful to you.
I love LinkedIn. When I do policy wonk stuff, I get really good readership from there. So I do think you figure out which audience goes where and why. I should mention a little bit about our platform because it's so different. There is a group in the Seattle area that have a platform called The Maven. And any publication, you might consider it if you're looking for a platform. And what they're basically doing is the anti-Facebook. And they're now up to about 250 million uniques a month. And what's interesting about it for us, and if you're on the publishing side, is you don't have to, we have an advertising department, but we also have through the Maven programmatic ads. And the big trend in advertising is ads sold by algorithm. And so we're able to start to get all of those without having to do anything. And just one part of that for us is really important is if you do native video pays about $10 for every dollar spent on a digital ad. And anytime we post a native video, the ads are sold. And that's really amazing for us. In fact, I didn't know what to budget for that. And so I put in a number, and we're already at 4 times that number because basically every time we put in a video, the ad sells out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, native video?
Yeah.
So if you do a video, sorry, if you do a video that you produce in-house and you put the file up instead of a link to social media, that would be a native video. And native videos can be sold as an advertising vehicle, whereas if you put it on Facebook or Instagram, you can't.
And Reddit, anyone want to chime in on that?
We've had most success with Reddit AMAs. Reddit AMAs with reporters. I know that our stories don't necessarily do well on LinkedIn, but we had recently with the Manafort trial, we had a Q&A with reporters who had been sitting in the courtroom that actually started out as an Instagram story, a call to action to readers asking if they had any questions about it. What do you want to know? What don't you understand? So we did a call to action on Instagram asking for questions. The next day we did live answers on Instagram stories that turned into a Facebook Live later in the day with readers asking questions. And later in the week it turned into a Reddit AMA asking questions. And it was super successful for us.
So moving across different platforms.
Correct.
With the same audience? Or?
I think the audiences on each platform are different. So... It's the same concept across platforms.
So, and if I can do a quick follow-up, if you want to wean yourself off Facebook and all the Facebook-owned different platforms, because, I mean, there really is a question of what's the value added there for you.
Right.
Mark, you mentioned this. What should your strategy be? How might you go about starting to do that? You mentioned Maven. You mentioned some other things, but do you have any quick thoughts on that?
Well, Maven's a very important one for us, but it's basically to get people from Facebook back to our site and then to somehow keep them there. And we haven't been successful keeping them there. Like I mentioned earlier, our bounce rate still is pretty high. About a quarter of our traffic comes from Facebook, so it's pretty significant. But trying to get them away from that as a regular. One of the ways that we're trying to do that is we've created a comment section on our section and we're trying to get people to actually engage instead of on commenting on Facebook. But it's still, folks will have a great conversation on Facebook and we'll get two or three comments on our site. So we're trying to move that.
One place that I feel like a lot of publishers aren't going and maybe they should be looking at is Tumblr. I think there's a built-in younger audience there, and there's plenty of ways to tell stories on that platform. It's sort of like a blogging platform, the way that it's set up, but there's a million possibilities on ways that you can tell stories on Tumblr. So it's something to look into.
Okay, I'm going to call on Megan here. She's got a pro user tip.
Instagram hashtag search is actually really, really good. So,
cool. I was going to call up Cassidy again, and I wanted to ask you this question. You know, there are a couple people here with gray hair, like myself, and I came up in a world of journalism where we were more reticent. One of the great things for me about being a writer was no one ever saw me. No one ever heard me. It was just like these words out there. How do you see, as someone who's younger and who's, you know, more facile with these tools, how do you see your personal self out there in the world through these different tools? And how should we think about it? How can you help us get more comfortable?
Hi, everybody. Like she said, I'm Caspi. Again, I go to Mizzou. I think it's really important that as social media becomes more and more popular, as more people are accessing your stories through social media, you should remember, even though it might be a little bit scary, you're more likely to be a public figure now. People are going to know you. They're going to see your name. They're going to want to interact with you as a piece of your story. You're not just the faceless entity reporting the story. You are a part of the story, and social media makes that really prevalent.
Follow on to what Cassidy said is, I know in our newsroom, one of the things that we've really tried to emphasize is to share your work in progress. So I'm out on a story, I'm taking pictures, and I'm tweeting them of the people I'm talking to. And there's actually a tool, if you're into audio, it used to be called Audiogram. It's now Headliner. And you can take a photo and take a little cut, I think up to a minute, of audio and put it in there. And so a lot of times, I'm sorry, I should have had one ready to go, but I'll take my best quote from my radio story and I'll put that on an Instagram and I'll tweet that and I'll put it on Facebook. Just the one coolest soundbite that I have and a good picture.
One thing that I always try to tell our journalists in the newsroom, because I know a lot of people are afraid about the whole self-promotion thing. One thing I always try to tell people is that we've sort of always told our stories in different platforms. So how many times have you done a radio interview about a story that you've written? How many times have you gone on TV and talked about it? It's the same thing on social media. So, I mean, don't be afraid to do it.
Great. Please tell us who you are, where you're from. And
my name is Francis Koster. I'm an author of 3 books, and I've been writing newspaper columns for about 10 years now. I don't know what a hashtag is. I don't know what Instagram is. Where would I go to get tutoring about this entire...
It's a great question.
It's been fascinating to watch how I use something. It's like I've been invited inside a house to see what it's decorated like, but nobody gave me a key. So if after the session is over, someone could help me, point me in the right
Great.
Direction.
Do you have any ideas? Where's a good place to learn if you want to brush up on your skills, or where do you keep in touch with the latest trends and developments in your medium?
I'll be honest, I watch YouTube videos. So, the number one way that I've learned how to do cool stuff on Instagram is by watching probably 13, 14-year-olds showing me how to use Instagram. It's interesting, because what I'm really trying to tap into is all of the different things that I can do with this platform. And I know that there are plenty of videos out there where people will show you how to do things. I would also Google around a bit. There are lots of tutorials out there. I just can't think of any off the top of my head that would explain to you exactly how to start building this stuff.
On the Headliner tool, the one with that puts the audio clips in, it actually, you just go to the web page, it asks you what photo do you want to use, what color type do you want to use, where's your audio. And I think you can actually do video in that too. It's not my medium, so I haven't really tried it yet. But yeah, it's a really cool tool. Again, not to share necessarily if you're a little uncomfortable with sharing yourself, sharing a great piece of an interview or even a comment that you have about your experience of reporting. So,
well, one place where I find a lot of Instagram tips as well is I follow Later, which is actually a platform that you kind of use to, a lot of people use it to kind of schedule out their posts. It's kind of evolved. It is a lot of business focus as far as the posts and stuff like that, but it does give a lot of really great tips on ways that you can be using it personally as well.
Okay. Megan has one comment.
I mean, that's the number one, that is the number one takeaway. You're talking to these people, you want to engage with your audience, you want it to be, you want to, I keep talking about building your personal brand, right? But you want to, it's about having a conversation. You're not just talking into the void, you're having a conversation with your audience.
Mark has a final word on that?
I was going to answer the guy's question, but he left. Mashable has a lot of really good devices that help bring you up to speed on almost every trend there is. Mashable.
Great.
Mashable.com. One final point, because it hasn't been mentioned, then I'll be quiet, is one thing we haven't mentioned is one of the great things about this new environment is long reads are more potent now than they've ever been before. We did a piece that was 10,000 words on abandoned oil wells in the West, and it was our second highest read of the month. So that's one really great thing for writers that's come out of this whole era.
But did they read to the bottom? Or just...
They did, and we actually can measure that. That's one of the cool things, is the time on screen tells you how many people went clear to the end.
Yeah, that how I reported it thread that I showed, that was a 15,000-word story, and people actually did go through it. So
one thing that I'm going to wrap up here. Is there anyone else who has a burning question you want to get out? Or a burning observation idea? Go ahead.
Just do you have examples of Mark Cuban important followers? I think you said
Yeah, well, so this gets into the theory of networking. You want to look for people who are hubs, who have people that you go to who are so important that what they say sends waves through a pond. One would be Esther Dyson. A tweet from Esther Dyson is incredibly important.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for showing up. We'll get the word out. I know that these sessions are recorded, so you'll be able to listen to the whole thing if you miss part of it. And let's continue talking about how we can leverage our relationship here to share each other's stories, to learn more about what one another is doing, the innovations we're coming up with. Thanks so much.
Well done. Thank you.